Chapter 7. The Siege of the Citadel. After many travails of blood and sorcery, Vandas's army had reached the center of Thron's kingdom. Of the many thousands who had set out from Elixir, just a few hundred stormcasts remained. Behind them burned a score of keeps and lesser forts. Thrond had fled, his armies overthrown and his citadel empty. The king had taken refuge in the Eldritch Fortress. Nevertheless, Vandas feared victory might slip from his grasp at this last pass. The alchemist's moon was rising, and today it would reach its apex, an event that would cause the Great Worm to turn its fires away from the Silver Sea. Already the moon was sliding past the crucible's rim, its light picking out the rough hills there in bright silvers and deep sable.
"Faster, my warriors! We must be quicker!"
Vandas sat upon Kallanax on a knoll overlooking Thron's castle. Around the landward side, stormcasts worked at the hill, hacking away at the hanging promontory the citadel perched upon. Magical hammers boomed and swords hacked slivers from the metal-rich stone. Thunderbolt crossbows sent crackling jags of energy searing into bedrock, melting the ores therein. Molten metal dripped into the sea, and the stone glowed ruby red. The alchemist's moon cleared the crucible, its lower rim parting from the horizon like the end of a kiss. Argentine shuddered and shied away from its weird brightness, and the silver started to thicken.
"Faster!"
called Vandas. His eyes flicked back and forth between his warriors and the alchemist's moon. So quickly it hauled itself heavenward, flowing as smoothly as quicksilver. At the summit of the island squatted Efrix's Eldritch Fortress. Its walls ran up to the very brink, jutting over the Silver Sea here and there. Strands of magical force crackled and whooped around the walls. Its copper skulls glowed with evil energies. The air shimmered and ran with multicolored sheet lightning. Over it pulsed the mighty Shard Gate, an irregular gash in the air surrounded by an inhumanly tall archway studded with gigantic crystals. The stepped walls of Thron's castle were modest by comparison, a crenellated ziggurat adorned with snarling effigies of his menagerie. It was situated upon a jag of rock standing clear of the island, directly above the Silver Sea.
"You race against 2 hourglasses. The timing must be perfect for your plan to work, and the sorcerer prepares to shift his fortress once more," said Thostos. "Let the sands of one run out, and all is lost. How long can we chase this mage across Chamon?"
"The timing will be perfect," said Vandas. "And if it is not, we will hunt him until the hammer is recovered. There is no other way."
"There is not, I concur. But we have only minutes before this chance is gone," said Thostos.
"We shall be ready," said Vandas.
Some deep-set part of the castle's foundations cracked. Stone screeched on stone. A quiver ran through the building, barely perceptible to the eyes of men, but strong enough to shake loose a statue and send it crashing into the sea.
"Halt!"
shouted Vandas. He ordered the stormcasts back from the trench they had hacked into the stone. Judicators aimed their weapons at the weakened section bridge and tensed for the final order. The moon went higher, eclipsing the stars with its bulk. Magic shivered through Vandas's armor at its waxing might. The Silver Worm's fires had gone out. The sea heaved under a rapidly forming skin.
"Stand ready,"
said Thostos. The moon passed over the Shard Gate, and its outline wavered behind the weird magics. The crystals in the gate glittered with colors as they captured the moon's light.
Kallanax roared. Vandas dropped his arm. The assembled judicators of his army fired with their magical arrows. The missiles transmuted themselves to darts and spears of energy and slammed into the ground by the base of Thron's citadel. A dazzling light burst across the Silver Sea, the moon's glow reflected 20 times over. Deprived of Argentine's fire, the ripples on the metal slowed and stopped. The shadow of the fortress and the island swept around the coast, and the silver stopped its churning. With a tremendous crack, the stone under Thron's citadel broke. Showers of rocks splattered into the thick medium of the sea. Then the fortress itself hit the setting sea, sending up a tall sheet of thick silver as it splashed down.
This washed up the cliffs onto the fortress walls, curling back onto itself in a massive argent wave. The shadow passed. The moonlight arrested the ocean, and the wave froze. Droplets of suddenly solidified silver fell from the sky as hard as bullets, rattling on the surface of the sea.
"The fortress is held fast!" shouted Vandas. "Galmaraz awaits! Charge!"
With a shout, the storm host scrambled forward onto the frozen mass of the wave. Digging in blades and clawed fingers, they hauled themselves upwards. The silver was still hot, and the metal burned them as they climbed, but the storm cast did not relent. In places it was thin, while in others too smooth or too hard, and a number fell, sigmarite clattering as they skidded helplessly off the metal and down to the sea below. Their departure boomed loudly over the frozen ocean, but still the storm casts were undeterred. Kallanax raced up the wave, taking Vandas to the plateau atop the island. Magic crackled and arced along the fortress wall, then gave out with a piercing series of whistles. Frozen silver anchored the walls firmly to the stone. The fortress was held fast. Vandas got down from the back of Kallanax and strode to the nearest gate. He hefted Heldensen and slammed it hard against the grotesque bronze face cast into the surface.
"Bring out the hammer!"
bellowed Vandas. He smote the door again.
"I call upon you, Efrix of Chamon. Bring out the hammer, and your end will be swift."
A third time Heldensen clashed into the gate, scarring the metal. The stormcast Eternals had gained the clifftop and were forming up. No word came from the fortress. The outer walls were much cracked and damaged from Thostos's earlier assault and left unmanned.
"Give me your answer, Efrix," shouted Vandas. "You are lost."
The rest of Vandas's army came after him. Thostos strode to his side. A crackling sound came from above, a whine building behind it. Vandas stepped backwards until he could spy the shard gate over the looming tower and walls. The crystal adornments sprayed fountains of sparks and long, bright streaks of crimson fire into the night. They flickered, turning through forms of pure light, patches of darkness, and back to gems. The shard gate rippled, the roil of energy visible through it coalescing and forming a wide landscape comprised solely of hideous faces. Uncountable voices whispered covetously as unearthly eyes fixed themselves upon Chamon.
"Here is your answer, Vandas Hammerhand."
The voice issued from the mouth of every gargoyle on the fortress walls. It was old and wise and full of dread power. Malice dripped from every word.
"A tide of demons to drown in. The hammer is no longer the godling's, but mine. Begone from the gates of the Eldritch Fortress. Take tidings of his defeat from here, and you may yet live a while."
The whine reached a crescendo. A howling wind burst out from the shard gate. One after another, the crystals exploded, sending tinkling fragments all over the fortress. When the last detonated in a burst of multicolored fire, the shard gate dilated, yawning wider and wider until it filled the sky. A triumphant scream blasted out, and the faces upon the other side pressed forward, then burst through, the single mass they made splitting into a cascade of demons that showered to the ground in an unending flood. They were long-armed and pumpkin-bodied, of blue and pink. They laughed and grumbled as they landed, galloping forward in knuckling runs and swinging down the decoration on the outside of the walls as agile as apes.
"There is a breach in the wall,"
said Thostos to Vandas, unmoved by the horde of creatures leaping free from the realm of chaos. "This way." Moments later, the first of the demons slammed into the stormcasts.
"Your magics are poor, wizard," said Corgus Cool.
He and King Thrond seemed to fill Efrix's scrying chamber. Cool stank of blood, and his eyes were manic in the sockets of the skull he wore as a helmet.
"And you've promised me a horde of demons, but bring me only mortals," snapped Efrix. "Fortunate it is for us all that my magic is strong enough to call up my own demons."
He stalked back and forth, mind working madly. His plans were not going as he intended. None of them. The demon gale would hold the enemy for a while, but for how long? Already, upon seeing the Stormcast's approach, he had resolved to flee once again. But the fortress was held fast. Dare he attempt the translocation to the Crystal Labyrinth now? He fretted over the issue. Despite what he said to the warriors, he had taken no part in the demon gale, and its advent spoke of but one thing. Kairos.
"My chariots will stop them," said Thrond. "We have no need of this blood-crazed madman."
"Will they now?"
Efrix cast his gaze heavenward in exasperation.
"They did not stop the foe upon the walkways. Your forts did not stop them. Your warriors did not stop them. Your knights did not stop them,"
he said bitterly.
"This remains my kingdom, Efrix. Watch your tongue."
"Your kingdom has fallen, you fool,"
shouted Efrix.
"This fortress is all that remains. You complained at my behavior as a guest, Thrond. Now you are my guest. So I say to you, watch your tongue."
"This is your doing, mage. You led them here," said Thrond. "I ought to kill you where you stand."
"And if they had the hammer, you would already be dead. We are forced upon each other's mercies, Vexos. This is a common enemy. Surely even you can see that Kul's presence here is proof of that."
"I am here only for the hammer hand," growled Kul.
"You invite the servant of the Blood God into my lands, when I could deal with these invaders myself? We will live to regret this."
"Silence!"
screamed Efrix. He jabbed a clawed hand at Thrond, and the king went as rigid as a corpse. When his muscles relaxed, his eyes glowed a watery green, and he was indeed silent. His head tracked Efrix's pacing as loyally as a dog's.
"Leave the one called Vandas to me. His head is mine," said Kul.
"By all means," said Efrix. "Now get to the defense. In the absence of more powerful allies, it will be you facing their hammers, but not alone. Thrond, get your chariots to the breach."
"Yes, my master," intoned King Thrond. "I obey."
The two warrior lords departed, Kul quickly, eager to be at the slaughter, with Thrond plodding after as sluggishly as a sleepwalker. Feathers rustled in the shadows. A dry smell of birds and magic wafted across the room on a draught stirred up by broad wings.
"Kairos,"
said Efrix. He fought to keep fear from his voice, smothering it in a shrill haughtiness.
"Why must you lurk so? You could have come forth and dazzled these wretches with your magnificence and saved my temper."
Kairos emerged from an alcove much too small to have contained him. He looked down at his acolyte with detached amusement.
"You cannot make them do your bidding. Must I do everything myself? You are a poor servant, Efrix." "All this is but a distraction," said Efrix. "The demon gale will hold them back."
"Will it?"
said the demon's right head.
"It was I that summoned it, though you told the bloody one otherwise. Alone, it will not be enough. I shall bring up an arcanabulum. You will have the honour of casting the lunar reversal, that we may escape the crucible's grip and ascend to the shard gate."
"The lunar..."
Efrix's face dropped.
"You will attempt the translocation now?" "Now when else, small-horn dabbler?"
said Kairos's left head.
"Did you intend to flee at our moment of triumph?"
"Will I not die attempting it?"
"Perhaps,"
said the right head.
"If you don't, then I will have nothing left to teach you."
"Perhaps not,"
said the other.
"If you die, well, the same will also be true."
A stab of cold terror raced down Efrix's spine. He had spoken those words himself once, long ago.
"What have you seen? What is my fate?"
Kairos held up a taloned hand, bringing it up and round in a grand gesture, finishing as a clenched fist before the sorcerer's face.
"You of all people should know that your fate is unimportant. Sigmar once learned that even he is not beyond Tzeentch's influence. What makes you believe your fate is your own to choose?"
Kairos's index finger flicked out. Efrix made to move, but found he was immobile, transfixed by Kairos's stare.
"With the demon gale come my brothers of the Nine. They gather now to call the Shardgate down. It is too late, I think, to bring all of Chamon to our master, but the hammer shall be his. Zinch himself will grant us many boons for that.
Kairos tilted one head to one side, the other the opposite way.
See? A simple plan. One even you cannot disrupt for me. The spell you cast upon Thrond. I taught you that, no?
Efrix was unable to answer.
Of course I did,
said Kairos's other head. He pressed his long talon into Efrix's left eye, and Efrix felt his will drain away from him. First went his control over Thrond, then his desire to triumph, until all was replaced with a cool indifference. Beneath this numbing blanket existed an ember of defiance, but it was small and cooling. Green light pulsed from Efrix's eyes.
It is high time we reminded Sigma who is the master of the spheres,
said Kairos Fateweaver.
You will aid me, little puppet, whether you wish to or not. Your days of freedom are done, ninth disciple of the ninth tower.
Kairos walked to a blank spot in the wall with a shambling gait, as if the form he wore were not entirely to his satisfaction. The Lord of Change spread his arms, and the wall flowed apart, revealing a staircase that wound around and down through the thickness of the great tower. The outer walls were pierced by many windows that let out onto the howling storm of chaos outside. Through them, the sorcerer could see the vortex of energy spiraling around the fortress, carrying demons on its winds. Thunder cracked and banged, fighting against the intrusion. Kairos clacked his beaks in laughter.
The storm god tries to bring his wrath to bear, but he cannot. All he can do is watch helplessly as we snatch away his true power. Your allies did better than you think, ninth fool of the ninth idiocy. They killed the raincallers and the nursemaids among the foe, and they cannot call more of Sigmar's lackeys down to earth.
Kairos eyed the stairs.
You first, I think,
he said. He jiggled one hand in a mockery of a puppeteer. Efrix danced stiffly towards the stairway, unable to stop himself. He raised his arms up before him, straight as brooms. Strangled arcane phrases spilled from his lips.
That is good. Wage the war for me,
said Kairos.
While I think,
said the other head. And so Efrix was carelessly worked by the Lord of Change as they went down and round the mighty tower, heading towards the secret inner keep. Efrix called up demons by the score as Kairos muttered and argued to himself, his heads disagreeing on the most petty of matters. Although he could not move without Kairos's direction, Efrix caught glimpses of the battle from the corner of his eyes. Stormcast Eternals had come easily into the ward of the castle via the unrepaired breach. They fought through Thrond's chariots, his own traps, and hosts of demons. They were mighty, he had to admit. Being so enslaved robbed him of anger, and he viewed the furious battle outside in a detached, calculating manner. Each twist of the stair brought him a new view. Winged warriors snatched from the air, and magical flames incinerating the enemy by the dozen. Lords transformed and destroyed. Warrior by warrior, the stormcasts were being whittled down. Kairos and Efrix reached the bottom of the stairs. The tower encased a domed keep of stone, and the tall gash in the tower let in the light of battle to fall upon it. From the centre of the keep glowed the painful brilliance of Gal Maraz.
Come, brothers, we have great works to accomplish,
Kairos croaked. Through the gap in the wall came a procession of 8 Lords of Change. They shuffled through, as slow as elderly men. All were different, their staffs marked with esoteric symbols even Efrix did not know. Here was one with plumage of bright magenta, there one with 4 eyes above a hooked beak. One was fat, while another was skeletally thin. One was covered in scintillating plumage, another's form flickered and blurred. They bowed to their lord as they passed, and Kairos greeted them all by name. Such names as hurt the minds of men, even those as well-versed in the arcane as Efrix. Names like that should only be learned after great preparation, but Efrix heard them all in relentless order. He was locked upright, unable to move. Inside the prison of his skull, he screamed. The eight stepped by, croaking obscure mandalas or bandying ineffabilities with each other. Their chatter was the chatter of madmen and geniuses. They were the sages of insanity, and reality itself rebelled at their presence. The foremost Lord of Change raised his staff, and the inner keep's doors shattered into colourful motes that swarmed upon the air. The lead cairn that had contained Gal Maraz inside the keep had been much battered, and the light of the hammer flooded out stronger than ever before. The Lords of Change were unconcerned by the light. At another croaked command, the cairn exploded, scattering lead bricks across the chamber and revealing the hammer itself. Efrix was exposed to its radiance in full. Some device of Kairos's protected him, but the sight of Gal Maraz to him was agony beyond agonies. Sweat dripped from his face, and he emitted a strangled scream. The Nine Lords of Change shuffled aside. As the last entered, the particles of light gathered themselves, and gates barred the way once more.
There! The first piece is in place.
One of Kairos's heads swung to address Efrix directly.
Now for the second.
Kairos raised his hands and extended his long necks. A yellow and green nimbus flickered around his staff. The Lord of Change said nothing, only held his arms aloft for a moment, then lowered them slowly.
It is done.
The ground heaved. The space around the inner keep became hot as a forge, and the stone of the ground glowed white with heat. From this bubbling pool rose up a complex machine, plucked from the hidden workings of reality, its spars and cogs dripping molten rock.
To work, Efrix,
said Kairos.
I am afraid you must perform this rite. I do not wish to suffer the energies myself. Quickly now,
said Kairos's other head. Efrix stepped close to the machine as it fully emerged. His clothes smouldered. His eyes watered, but he could not close them. The machine and the ground were cooling, and it was this alone that saved Efrix's skin and sight.
Begin the reversal,
said Kairos. Efrix set his body into motion. He knew the spell, of course, and locked inside his body, he cursed himself for the curiosity that had set him to learning it. At the black-worded incantation, the machine began to work, turning against the way its creator intended. Although physically divorced from the world, it retained a connection with it, and as it screeched into life, reality grumbled around it. The natural order of things was flung into reverse.
Glorious, glorious,
cackled Kairos.
Magic infuses everything. A heady mix of so many colours and winds. Feel it, Efrix. This is true power. Further, further. Make the silver flow away, so that we may greet our master in person.
The ground shook. The tower encasing the keep swayed. With a groan of tortured metal, Efrix's dwelling sheared away from the tower's stalk, revealing the shard gate blazing directly above.
Ah, that's the way, small sorcerer,
said Kairos indulgently. Efrix's limbs ached. Age ran cold claws over his bones. He had lived for hundreds of years, and his powers promised thousands more. But the Arcanabulum ran roughshod over the laws of nature and magic both, and the sorcerer withered as he chanted. His spine twisted, and his horns lost their luster, becoming flaky and dull. His hands clawed with arthritis. All the while, Kairos croaked and clattered his beaks in laughter, and true hate bloomed in Efrix's heart.
Success! Ha! Well done!
Shouted Kairos. The moon ground to a halt, and slowly, reluctantly, began to slide backwards. It went back past the point of apogee, and with a sudden rush, the silver holding the fortress liquefied and ran back into the sea.